Hello, this is Lee and Kate Reach welcoming you to this week's episode of Education Transformation. This week's topic is on international adult education.
If you've been enjoying the Education Transformation podcast, we'd really appreciate it if you'd share it with your friends and family and leave a review.
So Kate, today we're going to talk about adult education in developing nations. So over the years, we've done a bit of this. We've travelled to a number of different countries and undertaken development project work, etc. What happens to a person when they undertake a role like that?
I think foremost, it changes you considerably. You know, once you've done it once or you've thought about doing it and you've investigated it, and then once you've got there, there's no real going back. These experiences certainly change you and how you think into the future. I guess one of the biggest things is you see how much of a difference you can make to people with even just, not necessarily basic skills, but things that we would consider in our nation not to be so high level can make a huge difference in a developing country. So that's, you know, you have great fulfillment in what you do.
Yep. You walk away too, I think, with a sense of friendship and empathy for the community that you've been working with, and that sort of stays with you, doesn't it, into the future. It becomes a part of you.
It does. And for me and for you, we found those friendships last for years. We keep in contact with people from 2001 and our first foray into development work.
And I suppose the other thing is that you witness such dramatic change in people's lives, you know, some really constructive outcomes for people that you never envisaged could be the case when you first took up the role.
Yeah, it's a real delight. And for us, we had the experience of going back to a country 15 years after our first opportunity to go there and work in development. And we actually saw things that we'd implemented develop over time and become part of the actual society.
Yes.
So that was a great joy, which often you don't get to see in Australia or other developed countries, this huge transition.
No, that's right. It's a great privilege. It really did change the culture of the country in many ways. It empowered people to take what we taught them and to move it on forward. And with the government's support in that nation, it really became quite a considerable aspect of their economy.
Mm, yeah. So we went to Mongolia in 2001, which was a food security project.
We did, yes. And in that project, we worked with about 1,200 people. So that was very fulfilling and very rewarding. And then we returned in 2014 to Mongolia. And on this occasion, we worked in a medical program that you managed.
Yeah, and even things that aren't predominantly education-based, like the food security was, that was very much an education-based, going out, capacity development, teaching people how to create small farms. So it was very much education-based. But even the later one in the medical program, for me, it's very much about capacity development. So I was there as a program manager, but it was about how can I upskill these people to actually be able to do it on their own in the future. And that is my mindset when I go in. It's not about me or you having all the answers. It's about developing people so that they can actually manage these things for themselves into the future.
Mm. Yes, exactly. It's all about, you certainly don't want to take on the role yourself and be doing it yourself.
No.
You want to be presenting the vision and the support to enact the roles, but projects should be involving a number of people and capacity development and delegation of work roles and responsibilities, so that over time it's definitely self-sufficient, as we saw within Mongolia.
For me, it's about actually doing yourself out of a job long term.
It is.
So what are you doing specifically now in developmently?
Yeah, well, our business is very much focused upon international development work. We do some work in Australia, our home country as well, for the Commonwealth Government, etc. But a lot of our work is associated with international development. So at the moment, I'm working with two large adult education institutions in the country of Kiribati. Now, Kiribati is very small, and it sits out there in the Pacific. It sits up on the equator of the Pacific. Extremely hot. I find it extremely challenging in that respect. Not so much the heat, but the humidity is really intense. And so I find that a challenge, but I love it. I love being a part of development work anywhere in the world, really. And so in these roles, I'm obviously working with adult education institutions. So they're very different in what they do, but they are quite significant with regards to the enrolments. Like one organisation takes on about 8,000 enrolments a year. So they are significant education institutions within the country of Kiribati. So it's fantastic to be a part of. So in that role, or in those roles, both of those roles, it's very much about consultation. It's very much about bringing people along for the ride. It's very much about understanding where they're at when you first arrive. So I will often spend 2 or 3 weeks just listening.
Yeah, I think that's so important, that if you go in with the mindset of, I'm going to change things, I'm going to change them quick, I'm going to get things sorted, it doesn't work. Mm. It's really about sitting back, watching, considering, talking and hearing what's been happening, because there may be very good reasons why things haven't been implemented or haven't been changed.
Yes.
And if you go in and try and do that quickly with your own agenda, you get people offside so quickly.
Yes, absolutely. That's right. So a lot of listening, a lot of appreciation that although I've been going in and out now for 2.5 years, I know very little about the culture.
Yes.
And that's what I accept and that's what I appreciate. And so that's why I highly value the some of the executive staff and a lot of the faculty, because they will impart into me, okay, so what's happening at the moment when someone did that look on their face, they didn't say anything, but when they gave that look at consultation process, what they were actually referring to was this.
Yeah.
And then I'll explain how significant those eyebrows were when they were raised, or something very, very minor, but it'll change the whole dynamic in the room. Yeah. And I totally appreciate that, and I highly value that, because I might know adult education best practice, but I'm very much in their hands, and gratefully so, when it comes to the guiding of the implementation of the project as it unfolds.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest mistakes people can make is that, I've been here 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, I really understand this culture.
Oh, and you see it all the time.
But you really don't. You understand such a small part.
Yeah.
And the nuances that, you know, they're so, it's so difficult to define, but you can cross them and make mistakes so easily.
Yes.
That if you're not aware that you don't understand the culture, it can have really bad ramifications for what you're trying to achieve.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I go in there very transparently and I try and listen a lot. And right through the projects, I try and stay like that, with that mindset. So although I may begin to learn, obviously, some of the cultural traits, etc., that are occurring around me, I think it's a matter of just empathy and a matter of respect. It doesn't matter where you go in the world and whatever people group you work with, you respect that culture and you don't try and change them into the Australian culture.
Yeah.
Because even within Australia, you know, various institutions will work differently.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
The institution you work with at the moment will conduct itself very differently and expect certain professional standards as opposed to the adult education institution down the road. Yeah. And that's totally acceptable. So if it's acceptable here, it needs to be acceptable when you're in another country. Don't try and change them to be what you think they should be.
Yeah.
So that's the consultation process. And the consultation process certainly takes place initially, but also then throughout the life of the project quite regularly. And so I'll undertake initially an institutional review. Like I said, a lot of that is listening and talking with faculty and talking with executive staff and then talking with small groups, observing, going and observing teaching practices taking place, looking at the quality management system that's currently in place and just making a lot of notes. And then I'll present to key stakeholders, look, what do you think about this? What do you think? Do you need that? Do you think, because we could do it this way, would you like to see that take place? in your organization. These are some of the benefits if we go down this path. Would you like to see that? And most of the time they'll say, yes, please, let's do that as part of this development project. Or they might say, no, we're comfortable with that. That's being done in another setting, you know, using another stakeholder. That's fine. We remove it from the table, from the agenda. And eventually we come up with a strategic plan. So I'll write the strategic plan on behalf of the institution. And that plan will have a life of, say, 2.5 years. And it'll be endorsed, though. So it's a draft plan, and then it gets endorsed by the institution. So the community representatives that have been allocated that consultation role. So that'll be faculty members, and it'll be executive staff, and it'll be directors and so forth. And they will endorse it if they're happy with it, and then from there we move it forward. So everybody has a very clear understanding of what to expect and the timelines. Very important to have those timelines in place.
I'm just thinking what you're saying. It's really about empowering people. So, you know, what do you want? What do you need out of this?
Yep.
Where do you want to go? Because if you don't have that buy-in, nothing that you put in place your plan, it won't actually come to fruition. Because it's not their plan, it's your plan.
That's right. And so a lot of what we do too is in the strategic plan, in the framework of those plans, is that we will actually definitely identify areas for improvement that need to occur. But a lot of the time it's me working with key individuals to empower them to publicly drive it forward. And so, and I'm very much like that. Like, I can drive it forward, but it's much better if the local staff are empowered to do so. And so that publicly they feel confident enough to drive it forward. So I'll work with key groups and we'll have pathways going everywhere, and different stakeholders are empowered to take key components and objectives and move them forward.
Yeah. It's back to that capacity building again. So getting yourself, training people up so that you don't have a job in the future.
Absolutely. I feel I don't mind saying so. At times I'm called upon to run professional development programs over a number of weeks, which is fine. Facilitate those programs, that's fine. But, you know, I'm very much aware that you don't want too much of me as the public face of what's happening. We want to make sure the heads of department or the heads of school are the people that are driving it forward.
Yeah.
Yep. So that's a key component. So we work with the academic leadership. We might review the quality management system of the processes that are currently in place and offer suggestions. We certainly work with the faculty, both in small groups and then also in individual coaching sessions.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll get around and visit each member of the faculty. So if there's 60, 65 faculty in one campus, then we'll reach all of those and work with those and coach each individual during one given year. And it's scheduled, and so it continues to occur, as well as the ongoing professional development where they come together as groups and things. So because you're building individual personal relationships built upon trust over time, the whole faculty gets on board and buys into it, and more trust develops, and it actually creates its own momentum as it begins to take place and occur, which is fantastic for the local people.
Yeah, that trust is a huge issue in development. So if you break it in the first week, few weeks, first couple of months, it's almost impossible to retrieve. And unless you have that, you can't develop a working relationship with the organisation or the people you're working with. I think even more so than in your home country.
Yes.
So that's such a underpinning principle of any work you do in development.
Very much so, yeah. And to ensure that it remains sustainable, we'll often work with the stakeholders to develop e-learning content. So whether it be some sort of learning platform that we'll introduce, or they might have it in place already, but all of the learning resources and all of the curriculum that we develop for best practice and all of the components that make up, you know, the project that we're working in, all gets put in to an e-learning context as well, so that everyone can access it. It's quite dynamic, and they can review it, and it becomes part of their annual professional development performance management in organisations, which is great. And then they can also add to that content moving forward as well. So they're encouraged and supported to, this is how it works, this is how you can add stuff, press this button here, it does this, does that. And so that, you know, heads of department, etc., can begin to manage that moving forward, which is fantastic. And then we do the monitoring and evaluation. We do that quarterly, and we also do that in particular annually. So at the end of the first year, we'll write a fairly large, significant report for donor agencies and, you know, the directors and, you know, program managers in relation to this is where it's at. This is where we're actually more advanced than what we thought we would be. And this is where we're actually more behind than where we thought we would be. These are the reasons as to why. But these are contingencies, and these are the plans that we've got in place to address whatever the issue is moving forward. And as long as you're diligent and as long as you're well organised, it actually runs almost to the day of the planning process when it was originally put in place. Of course, some of these development projects, you know, they're always going to throw up unpredictable scenarios,
yeah.
as we've experienced.
Yeah, it's important. I mean, you hear it all the time, you've got to be flexible, but you really do have to be flexible.
You do.
It's not just a concept of, oh yes, I'm flexible. Yeah, it's in your everyday practice.
And all emotion needs to go out the window. Yes. You know, when you feel frustrated, you need to take a deep breath, and it does happen, and you need to take a deep breath and say, you know what, this isn't my country. I'm working with some fine people. There's some extraordinary challenges inside work and also outside of work, and I need to respect that.
Yeah. There's always so much more going on that you don't see or don't understand. And if you can have that mindset that, you know, there's always a reason for behaviour or actions, that will be quite logical if you actually knew it. It helps take away some of that frustration.
Yes, it does. It does. Why, Kate? Why is our business model of transformation consultancy, why is it so committed to international development?
It's all, I think, for us about empathy and, you know, wanting to see people do well and do better and have better lives. And it might sound cliche, but that is some of the underpinning reasons.
That's probably the major component, yeah. Isn't it, really, for us?
I mean, if you think back, we've known each other a long time now, and the first thing you asked me the first time we went out was, where do you want to be in 5 years? And it was answer, somewhere working overseas. So it's always been with us.
Yes, yes. No, not driven by the fact of a love of travel.
No.
But driven by the fact of you know, you can use your skills and your resources to empower others, to enrich others' lives. There's a great empathy. There's a great reward. I think you take much more away, taking away finances out of the conversation, you take much more away of feeling fulfilled and that it was worthwhile. In amongst all of the challenges that this sort of work can offer, it's a wonderful experience when you see people so enriched and often their lives change considerably, both economically and professionally, to be able to move their families forward.
Yeah, it's a real privilege to be involved with.
It is. So, Kate, I just wanted to stop this podcast to discuss this fantastic new product we've got launched.
Yeah, it's really exciting, our online coaching. It means that any of our listeners or any of our clients, no matter where they are in the world, can contact us for a coaching session.
It is, and look, it's really cost-effective, and the great benefit is it can be done at their time and at their choosing, their location. So it's a wonderful opportunity. Yeah.
So how much is it, Lee?
How much is it? Look, it's $80 Australian. And then, of course, in Australia, we have the goods and services tax, so it's $88 all up for 1 hour. But in an hour, of course, you can discuss quite a lot in that time frame.
So what format does the coaching take?
Well, we've established it so we can do video conferencing discussions. And so the client may wish to speak with myself, or they may wish to speak with you or a member of our team to discuss a specific issue, whatever topic they want. You know, with 30 years of experience in adult education between the two of us, you know, we can pretty much cover most subjects, although we are perhaps starting to feel a little bit older when you suggest that there's 30 years between us. But look, it's a fantastic opportunity to reach out and to link closer with our listeners and with our clients.
It would be great. I'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, yeah. The preparation involved, really jump onto our website, take a look. How do you schedule an appointment? Very straightforward, all clearly defined on the website. So what's the website?
It is www.transformationconsultancy.com.au and click on the link for online coaching.
Why is it really important that our business model is flexible? And it has had to have been, and it is. But why is that really important for some of the listeners that are thinking about getting involved with this sort of work?
Yeah, so a lot of the projects or work that you might do in development, while there may be a whole lot of planning put in place, things change rapidly. So you do have plans, you do have structures, but they need to be adaptable and they do change and be willing to work like that. So you need to have a mindset for your business that it needs to be adaptable and flexible.
It does. It does. So we can plan in consultation with our development stakeholders. We can be planning the year ahead and say, all right, so we'll visit for 4 inputs a month at a time over 2020 or 2019 or whatever it is, over a given year. And in that time, everyone will agree, yep, that'll be great. And then something will happen. Someone will die or there'll be a restructure or something will take place.
COVID-19,
exactly. And everything changes. And COVID-19 is not an isolated experience. It's just the way it is. And then when you get there, you know, the progress of what should have occurred over the last couple of months hasn't occurred, and there's often legitimate reasons for that, quite legitimate reasons. So you have to take that into account too, and then you have to sit down and think sideways with your colleagues in the local country about, all right, how are we going to try and fast track what we need to do without shortcutting it so we can catch up to where we need to be. So things like that.
Yeah. Other things are governments change and their priorities. Yes. Donor agencies' priorities change. Yes. And so projects might finish sooner than planned or the direction might change completely. So there's lots of influencing factors.
There are. And perhaps one of the more down-to-earth things is illness.
Yes.
Just on a practical level. So I've gone in and out of the Pacific probably maybe 20 times now over the past couple of years. But on 2 of those occasions, I've got quite ill and had to cut my visits short and return back to Australia for medical treatment. So it's just, and that's completely unplanned for, and generally I'm pretty fit and healthy. So it's just some of those things that are just unpredictable and we have to accept it.
Yeah. I guess that leads us into some of the challenges of working in development.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Obviously illness.
Definitely illness. I mean, most of the time you get ill in some capacity. Not drastically ill all the time, but you'll get, you know, food poisoning and things like that. And that's just part of it, part of the adventure in a way. But it is, it probably goes hand in glove with the fact that international travel is actually quite tiring and quite demanding.
Yeah.
It mightn't seem like it on the outside, but it's actually pretty hard when you're doing it consistently.
Yeah.
Separation from family.
Yeah. So for you, you're leaving your immediate family, but in other contexts, it could be your extended family, and that can be just as difficult when you're really isolated.
Mm, sure.
So, you know, not being able to contact them by phone or email, you know, internet drops out all the time and, you know, you can't have a video conference so you can see each other. So there's those sort of issues that can be challenging if it's prolonged.
Absolutely. That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Staff turnover, as we've spoken about previously, with perhaps directors and things changing and then the understanding of just how the vision was laid out in the first place is not necessarily understood in the handover process. So that can certainly influence some of the decision-making moving forward?
I think in the workplace for me is the bureaucracy. We have it here in Australia and we have a lot of it,
mm-hmm.
but it's a different bureaucracy and you don't understand it, and that can make it even more frustrating.
Yes, yes. Yes.
And difficult to achieve things, get things done.
Well, I think a classic example of that is when we went to Mongolia the first time, and no one would walk into the office if you didn't have a key, and yet the office door was unlocked.
Yes.
And we'd line up freezing cold because it's 40 below over there in the mornings and in winter, and you're waiting to get in, but you'd be waiting, and why can't we go in? No, no, Lee, you can't open the door. Why not? Well, there's a piece of string across the door with blue tack holding the door in place, so you can't, until the director arrives, you cannot remove that string.
Yes.
From the blue tack. And it was a cultural thing that dated back from decades ago.
And the telephone that was locked up for a month in a safe because the person who answers the phone was on leave and no one else can answer that telephone. So there's hundreds of calls being missed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're things you don't understand, but they're relevant in the place you are.
They're important, yeah. I think things like just logistics when you're on the ground, you know, like transport and the ability to get shopping, you know, for your own food requirements during the week is very challenging for people who are just flying in and flying out.
And it takes a long time to get anywhere.
Yes.
You know, you might have 4 appointments lined up, which you think are quite doable.
Mm.
But once you take into account traffic, it may literally be 3 hours there one way for 10 kilometres and 3 hours back. So your whole day is monopolised. Being transported.
Quite right, quite right. And you just have to accept it.
Yes.
You just have to, no point getting frustrated. You have to just accept it.
There's no way around it.
No. And perhaps the only other thing I can think of is security. And it is a reality where because you're not of the culture, then you will stand out naturally.
Yeah.
And that's okay if you're with a group. But on occasions and depending on the country that you're in, if you're an individual, then you just need to be a little bit smart about how you would conduct yourself moving through those streets.
I know for me, I try not to stand out. Like, I won't wear bright colours.
Yes.
I won't wear a lot of jewellery, whether it's expensive or not.
Yes.
I won't wear those things. I won't have fancy bags.
No.
Because you don't want anything to highlight your presence that may make you attractive to robbery or other threats.
Exactly. Always carry a small amount of cash on you, but not too much.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, okay. So there's some of the challenges. So what ensures success when you're working in developing nation and on development projects? What are some of the broad characteristics that we should consider when we're thinking about how to be successful?
I think definitely reduce your expectation of what you can achieve on a daily basis.
Yes.
You know, I'm a list writer. I use a diary. I like to tick things off. But I found I had to adapt that. I would have things in my diary that had to be done that day.
Yep.
So it was very minimal. But then I would have this to-do list that I would move week to week to week.
Yes.
So it wasn't as though it had to be done that week. So I was moving my expectations about what I could get done. But I could still look at it and refer back to it. So is that adaptability in your work processes?
Yes.
And understanding that I'm not going to be getting done everything I want.
Yeah.
Just because of the logistics of living or working where you are.
Exactly. Exactly. I think a willingness, like we've said before, but it just is so important and so many people overlook it. It's really important to consult and to listen.
Yes.
So you might have a view, you might have a vision, you might know how to make it work, but if it's not going to be accepted by the society, then why bother trying?
Yeah.
So you're better off working as a collective.
Yeah. And respectfully asking why. Why do you do it this way? What's the reason for this? You know, because unless you ask that, you're never going to know if it's reasonable or it's a leftover from years and no one knows why they do it,
mm-hmm.
which in that case, they might be very willing to change.
Yep, yep. You need to have a really advanced knowledge of in this context of adult education. So you need to have a very clear understanding of what is best practice, so that you can review current practices and say, okay, I can clearly see that that needs to be addressed and that needs to be addressed. How it's going to be addressed is going to be a discussion as a collective discussion, but I know that these are the areas that need to be rectified. You even need to have that understanding to know where to look.
Yeah. And I think important to be able to separate what is best practice or what is required from what is your own cultural expectations. You know, you might expect people to wear shoes in the classroom because it's, you know, that's what you do, especially in a workshop. But it may be that they don't have the equipment or it's not a cultural thing. You know, what is a cultural expectation from you in your home country as opposed to what it is there? And is that really a requirement? You know, being able to separate those two things, best practice and cultural, your own cultural biases.
That's right, yep. Coming with the mindset of you're there to support and empower individuals, not to dominate.
I think very much so. You've got to be there to actually build people up to be independent.
That's right. You certainly don't want to be viewed as someone that's coming in to take over their existing responsibilities. You want to be someone that's there as a support to enhance their current functions and to reassure people too, because often individuals in developing nations are actually highly skilled.
Very highly skilled, highly educated.
Yeah, and you need to just sometimes it's awfully powerful to just reaffirm how good they are.
Yeah, and to be willing to learn from them.
Yes.
You know, to learn what they know, how they do things, why they do things, but not even necessarily in the workplace. You know, sometimes, you know, how do you make your national dish? How do you celebrate? How can I, you know, be part of this and affirm that these are really important things to you?
Yes.
On a social level as well. So the bigger picture makes it more successful as well.
Well, I think, and that in particular with yourself, that's evidenced by the fact that even last night, you're still getting Facebook messages from colleagues back in Mongolia that you worked with about 3 years ago. So that confirms the strong relationships in place and the respect, the mutual respect that's in place.
And those relationships, I think, that building those relationships really are your key, number one key to success.
That's right. That's right. All right. So just in closing, what about some advice for people that are thinking about taking on a similar role? It's really important to make sure that you're the right person for this sort of role. So what are some suggestions?
I think you need to identify whether you're able to step back and, you know, are you willing to let other people go forward and have the credit and develop them? Or do you need to control everything?
Mm-hmm.
If you need to control everything, if everything has to be done to your standard, it's probably not the sector for you.
Mm-hmm.
So, and about that flexibility of, you know, plans change, you know, you can't achieve what you might back here. But also your underpinning reason for being there. You know, is it about your development? Is it about you getting a good career? Or are you there to develop other people?
Yes.
I think that's really important as well.
Yep. And although we've spoken a lot about the importance of strategic planning, and it is really important to be a strategic thinker and to be someone that's organised.
Yeah.
And if you're not that personality, that's fine. You know, it's really probably not for you. Because you really do need to be organised. You do need to be very focused and able to think 3 days ahead. But you also need to accept the fact that, okay, the strategic plan should go, you know, it's run over 2 years, run over 3 years. It should go to plan because I'm providing input and because I've got some great people that I'm working with. And they are definitely invested in the role. But if it doesn't, at the end, right at the end, if we end up being where we've accomplished 80% of our goals and we've got a lot to celebrate but we didn't accomplish everything, development really is about developing the people around us and handing it on to others to then take forward.
And it can be two steps forward, one step back. You know, there are lots of challenges. So, and you might not always see it when you're in the middle of it that you are moving forward, and that can be frustrating.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So being able to just let go of frustration and not being extremely controlling, I think you can't be a really controlling person and work in that type of environment.
And perhaps finally, being willing to provide fearless advice, but graciously.
Yeah.
So you got to find that balance where you will always provide advice, professional advice based upon integrity, but at the same time, graciously wording that advice. And so that you're not talking at people, but you're nevertheless providing guidance when it's required.
I think that is important, But also being able to know who to give it to.
Yes.
You know, and the context, you know, is it a group, is it an individual? So being able to read those interpersonal skills and cultural norms for that environment so that you're not causing offence either.
Sure, absolutely. All right, so if you're thinking about international adult education, then hopefully this discussion has given you a little bit to think about, and if you get involved with it, it's fantastic. It's a great opportunity.
But just realise you'll never be the same again. You'll always think differently.
Yeah, quite right. Did you know Transformation Consultancy also delivers online professional development? Please take a look at our website at www.transformationconsultancy.com.au.